The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly. In today's big tin of bullet, Old Trafford, electric fixture lit up by energy-saving element. We hail Dimitar Berbatov and ask Liverpool, are they too bald? Elsewhere, Newcastle harness the power of the Hatton, but just who is this Ben Arthur fellow? And Blackburn's Big Sam unveils the tactical news that's got literally no big clubs after him, with El Hadj as a linebacker. There's Spanish news. Leo Messi surviving Hackney Marshes only to get stretched off in the Liga. The latest from Italy and Germany too, with a proper fans protest and Steve McClaren's first words in German, not counting the time he said he wasn't bitter. All that plus the Championship in today's Football Weekly. Well, here we go then with an exciting looking lineup. So we have Greg Ruffley in. Greg, nice to see you.
Hello, James.
Hello to you. Paul McInnes, who's wiping banana off his bicycle cat eye.
In fact, it's over all my personal effect.
Tell us about the exploding banana.
Well, you know when you get a banana and you buy it in the shop and it's green and you're like, I can't eat that. Yeah. I'm going to let it ripen.
Right.
But then you get to that intermediary stage where you're not sure whether it's ripe enough or whether it's overripe.
Right.
Well, I made a bad call.
Yeah.
And put a banana in my bag, which I thought was just ripe enough.
There's a lesson for us all there, listeners. Raphael Honigstein, good to see you back from Vienna. I bet you're glad you returned, don't you?
It was Salzburg.
Yes. Okay, let's move on quickly to Man United Liverpool. And, well, hey, how about this? Now, this morning, Sir Alex Ferguson's all over the papers saying it could have been a cricket score. Greg, what do you say to that?
Well, he's right. He's right that Man United dominated the game and deserved to win ultimately. But to say it could have been a cricket score is a bit rich. He's basically Liverpool from the off, like assumed a very containing style of football, were very defensive, and United were 4-4-2 against Liverpool's 4-5-1, and therefore United were the dominant force. And Liverpool's game was always going to be to contain. But to say that they had enough chances to score what a cricket score? What's that? 100? 99? You know, if it's England, I suppose it's much less.
I must say, I watch Premier League games without any emotional attachment, but I felt myself feeling sorry for both Torres and Jarrod and also Liverpool supporters through most parts of the game, because they were just so abjectly ordinary. It was quite painful to watch.
Greg, 5 points from five games. You're hovering between Wolves and Stoke at the wrong end of the table.
Mm.
What light at the end of the tunnel can you offer?
Well, we've had Liverpool have had the worst possible start. Five games, including Manchester City, Arsenal, and Manchester United, in which Hodgson's had to deal with bringing new players in. Mascherano has left and left him in the lurch as well, and that's a lot of energy that's gone out of the midfield.
These new players that he's brought in, how well do you think he's brought them in? How happy are you with, say, the use of the Konchesky, for example? I've got a very excited Garrett the Hedgehog here. Who just sent about six tweets in a row saying, he can't pass, every time we went through him, the ball went straight to United. Paul Konchesky can't pass.
Well, it's like all the shops were closed and Hodgson needed a television and there was only Argos available to get one from. And it did the job, you know. And Konchesky will do a job now through till January. Maybe
right.
You can find a better fullback then.
Right.
But, he's played, what, three games?
And
yesterday against Manchester United was always going to be difficult.
Rafa's got his hand up. He wants to make a point about Liverpudlians talking about wanting a TV when the shops aren't open. And
no,
how surprising it was that he ended up.
I wouldn't stoop that low. No, I think the problem is, I mean, Greg's right, of course, they've got easier games coming up. But you'd think that one thing Hodgson could do is set up a team not to get beat against better sides from his experience at Fulham. Mm. So the fact that they didn't manage to get much out of games where they didn't have to create anything themselves is quite worrying. I think they'd be even probably have a more difficult time creating chances against teams who'll defend against them, because that's not really their game, and that's where they've been struggling throughout the Benitez years.
I think I would offer a chink of light of hope for Liverpool. I thought they passed the ball a lot better on Sunday than they have done in previous weeks, and that might not be saying much because it wasn't very adventurous. A lot of it was quite flat.
That's because Morelos was in the midfield, I think. He looked like a ball player.
Yeah, he looks like a ball player. Joe Cole looked dynamic on the ball.
Did he?
I think he did. It was a lovely pass for the first goal.
I do think that there's been an overly negative reaction to Liverpool since the beginning of the season, because all eyes are on Liverpool. Joe Cole, he didn't play immensely well yesterday, but from what I saw, there was times when he was dropping deep and taking the ball with two players around him, and he was the only one who was willing to show for it, whereas Gerrard wasn't showing. Poulsen, I mean, it's not his job to. He doesn't seem to want the ball. He's just there to kind of break things up. I think you're right. I think, you know, Joe Cole, if he finds the right position for him, and that's what Hodgson's got to do now, find the right position for the players he's got and start to move on from here.
I think it's not so much about finding the right positions, it's about making the players play to the system. And that's why it's going to take time. You know, Konchesky, for all his technical limitations, will play very well as a left back for Liverpool. I'm confident of it because Hodgson has drilled him before into playing that position. He was excellent for Fulham last season, and as long as the players are willing to listen to Hodgson and play to the roles that he ascribes them, they'll do well.
Isn't the problem that they're just too bald at Liverpool?
Yeah, they are really bald. Didn't Moraes used to have a big shock of platinum blonde hair, and it's now all gone?
You know, when Rafa had that goatee, you know, when he first unveiled that, there was a lot of talk about, well, no manager's ever won with a goatee. Has a bald football team ever won anything big? That's my question. Apart from in Italy, of course, where
Gary McAllister had a good spell, didn't he, at Liverpool?
Right.
Yeah.
All right, just throwing it out there.
Have you had a call off
Zinedine
yet,
Zidane?
No, I haven't. No. I could do, though, couldn't I?
Gianluca did okay.
Gianluca did okay, but that's, I mean, the Italian, it's a different paradigm.
Zidane?
Metaphorically speaking. Zidane. Yeah, but I'm saying, yeah, that's one. You can have one.
But he was very bald.
Just a team of... You've had teams that have shaven their heads after victory, but I don't think that counts. I don't know. I'm just, you know, stirring up the pot of debate. That's all I'm doing. Good. United. Oh.
The weird thing was that Ferguson wanted to make the point that somehow Torres had cheated or had made a meal of the challenge from O'Shea, which... There was absolutely nothing I could see that he did wrong. He was held and he fell, and it was a yellow card. And I don't even know why Ferguson mentioned it. It was very strange.
It's something that I call mind games. Yeah. What happens is, sorry,
you play them before the match, though, not afterwards.
Well, exactly. There's always a match
kicking a dog when it's down. You know,
he's always playing mind games with Liverpool.
Just make one point as well that. Hodgson, if he looks in history now, Liverpool, Houllier's first season in charge, Liverpool finished seventh and didn't even qualify for the UEFA Cup. Benitez's first season in charge, Liverpool finished fifth and only qualified for the Champions League by virtue of winning it. So, I mean, Liverpool fans' expectations have been tempered this season. I don't think the media's have, though, and maybe they should.
All right. United. Dimitar Berbatov. Eh? So that's what he was saving all his energy for. Remarkable.
Cracking second goal.
Well, let's really see him do it against a proper team. And then we'll talk again.
Carragher was about 4 yards behind him on that second goal. I know it was a bit of genius, but Carragher did allow him to...
Well, yeah, he just didn't get his time.
But it's not just this game, is it? He's got, what, six in the league now?
He's been playing well. He's a beneficiary of the new fashion 4-4-2 at Old Trafford, or the old fashion of 4-4-2. I mean, they've changed it back. It works very well. The problem for him is that in the big games against the big teams, the good teams, I'm sorry to say, Greg, Ferguson doesn't play that system. Doesn't play it in Europe. Doesn't play it against the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal. That's why he's been sitting on the bench for most of the time of the last 2 years, and that's why he'd probably be sitting on the bench again, because I don't think he can really trust Scholes and Fletcher holding the midfield against a team that can actually keep the ball and pass the ball.
Wouldn't you play him instead of Rooney at the moment as a lone forward?
No.
Why not?
Because a lone forward is not his position either. That is his position. He needs to be the second forward coming deep, linking. That is his perfect position. That's why he was signed originally. That we signed originally. Unfortunately, Ferguson, because of changing it in Europe and also Ronaldo coming into his centre forward position quite a lot, changed it, and that restricted his opportunities.
The question is whether he can make these moments count when he has a little bit of space and a little bit of time to deploy that technique that he has. Quite often in his Manchester United career, he's not taken advantage of those moments. The question is now whether he does that, really.
That's a question. Here's another one. Chelsea are looking good, but can they keep this run up once the easy fixtures run out?
I think so. It's hard to see it not continuing. I mean, they're a little bit reliant on Drogba, that's nothing new. I think without him, they don't quite have the same oomph up front. And of course in Essien they almost have a new signing this year, and he really makes a big difference. I mean, that's actually a good example of why, you know, talking about formations in itself doesn't really tell you much, because you can play three holding midfielders the way Liverpool do and they're just stifling the opposition doing nothing, or you can play three central midfielders the way Chelsea do, just overrun the opposition constantly, bombing forward and killing everyone in sight. And it's the same formation and more or less the same system. So they are just this machine, aren't they? The blue machine churning out results, churning out big wins. Hard to see them break down.
It was just good to see you follow English football without any emotional partiality. Sorry,
I say that as a neutral.
Right,
it was just far too easy against Blackpool.
Yeah, well, that was a shock, eh? What about Arsenal? What a bizarre goal that Fabregas scored.
It was a lovely goal, delightful goal. Nothing better than seeing Anton Ferdinand shank one into the opposition and then spin in from 30 yards.
Take 10 seconds to decide that. Oh, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to boot this against Fabregas's foot.
It was funny, though, because it was matched, really, by Gael Clichy in that last, the Fergie time that went on when they conceded the equaliser. That Gael Clichy just completely lost it, and he had an easy chance to kind of clear it and decided to poke it. And perhaps even to a teammate, perhaps out for a corner, really didn't know. It ran right into the path of Darren Bent, and he scored.
Went off Koscielny, is that right?
It might have taken a slight deflection, but it was certainly Clichy's moment of hesitation. And he's kind of, ever since that game, the Birmingham game, where they blew the title and he gave away that penalty slightly unfortunately, which occasioned William Gallas to sit down, he's been liable to these sorts of things. And I think people talk about a soft heart of Arsenal, and I'm not entirely sure. I'm quite impressed with the centre-half pairing. I've seen them a couple of times.
Really?
And Skrelatsi, Koscielny. I think they, particularly in the air, they look strong. I think you've still got a couple of question marks over some of the players, and I think Clichy is one of those.
All right. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the League Cup midweek when they take on freewheeling Spurs, eh?
Is it really?
And they're, it is going to be interesting. Spurs,
they won't be taking them on, though.
It'll be the
15-year-olds.
The young'uns, exactly. Would it? Yeah, all right, cool. Is Fabregas injured?
Apparently he twisted his knee slightly in the process of scoring that goal, inadvertently.
Ligament, apparently.
All right.
It's a shame.
Now, let's move on. All three promoted sides are in the top half. How about that? West Brom, thanks to their stirring victory over Birmingham, in the first of 12 West Midlands derbies this year in the Premier League.
Yeah, I think they only really take Birmingham and Villa seriously, though, don't they? That's the only serious derby around there, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, no, West Brom and Wolves, sorry. That's
okay.
The other one. Yeah.
All right.
West Brom and Birmingham, I don't know if they hate each other.
But a good result there for Roberto Di Matteo's
and a very good tactical change at half-time. The first half, Birmingham swamped West Brom in midfield. West Brom were playing 4-4-2. And Birmingham just had more men in midfield, were keeping possession better, and took a 1-0 lead. Half-time, Roberto Di Matteo did the rare thing that managers, you don't see him do very often, and actually change things quite drastically. Hauled off his striker, stuck on Graham Dorans, I think, in midfield, and they went on and scored three goals in the second half with a 4-5-1 formation. So it's kind of a turnaround, really. You'd expect 4-4-2 to be the more attacking formation in the Premier League, but he proved it doesn't necessarily have to be.
He's got that, because that Odin Wingy is a big unit, isn't he? He looks quite comfortable leading the line.
He's the man who's going to do all that scoring that they couldn't do
He looks like it. I think they got him for $1.5 million as well, so he's a great signing. And they benefited from, I think he was hounded out by racists in Russia or something at the team he was at.
Yep. Yeah.
So they've really benefited, and I think he should enjoy his football there.
And the other addition that West Brom do have is, as Greg mentioned, Graham Dorans, who is probably the player of the season in the Championship last year, and hasn't really featured in the first 11 so much. He's been out, I think, injured.
Kind of player is he, Paul?
Well, he's kind of a little playmaker-y, a bit like a Van der Vaart or something like that. He likes to run with the ball, but he's got a good eye for a pass, and he's scored, I think, a dozen goals in the Championship last season. So he's a goal threat too.
Wow, out of midfield.
So with three men in midfield, then you can, two of them doing all the work, and you can actually do the creative bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, all right. Newcastle. Listen, just who is this Hatem Ben Arfa figure?
I don't know. No idea.
Any ideas?
I haven't got heart.
If only there was some sort of research tool of linked computers or even television stations beaming.
Or people knowing stuff about something.
Yeah, if only. Hey, but Newcastle, what a way to bounce back from that Blackpool defeat. They're up in the top half as well. And Blackpool, as we mentioned, despite the 4-0 against Chelsea. Well done then to Chris Hughton. Blackburn Fulham, speaking of genius managers, Big Sam has big plans. El Hadjidjouf, is this the worst bit of blatant cheating that you've seen in a football match since, I don't know, the doped water bottle in Italia 90?
Luis Suarez. It pales in comparison to Luis Suarez. I mean, it's hard.
What, the handball are you talking about?
Yeah.
No. I'm not saying cheat. But yeah, it's a fair point, because I should have made myself clearer.
Okay.
Premeditated cheating.
Orchestrated cheating.
Orchestrated cheating. If you didn't see this, El Hadjidjouf has specific duties now of going out and taking out the opposition goalkeeper. How appalling is that? That he's clearly been given that.
But hasn't he been going off rage? Hasn't John Terry been doing that for years?
No, he might stand in front of the goalkeeper.
Cavallo, yeah. It's just Big Sam taking a leaf out of Big Jose's.
Big NFL. Well, but yeah, he was saying he's been over to the NFL.
He spent time with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where apparently he got many ideas for football tactics.
Sacking the quarterback.
Yeah, so sacking the quarterback with Diouf as the fake receiver, with Christopher Samba coming in and then collecting the ball.
I think you've got your offense and defense a little bit mixed up there, Greg.
Really?
He'd be a marauding linebacker.
Marauding linebacker, yeah, really? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mourinho used to do that American Express ad,
yes,
where he'd say, you have to block the keeper on a little blackboard.
Right. Well, blocking the keeper is something that we've seen, and it's not strictly legal. But having El Hadji Diouf eyeing up the keeper, waiting until he takes his basically looks up towards the ball and then barge into him several times in a match is plain cheating.
I think it's not... The fault doesn't lie with Diouf, the fault lies with the referee or with the spirit of the game, which allows these kind of
things
to happen.
That's like me saying that the fault of whoever stole my bike last Thursday after the podcast lies with the police for not arresting that person. It's the fault of whoever it is out there who took my bike.
Yeah.
But it's not illegal for him to screen the keeper. It's illegal for him to
run into the keeper like Diouf did, and Diouf wasn't even looking at the ball. He just looked at Schwarze, ran straight at him, and then barged him out the way.
The thing is, in most European football books will have a reference in the relevant clause saying that if you attack the keeper in the 6-yard box, this is an automatic foul. It doesn't exist here.
Oh, right.
So Rafa talked about this a couple of years ago, and he was laughed about when he mentioned that there is a different rule. And it's not a different rule, but it's an interpretation that is being followed on the continent, which is not being followed here. So if you touch somebody in the 6-yard box, even just a slight sort of a notch or something, is always an automatic foul, and it isn't here.
In the 18-yard box? Leads,
no, just a 6-yard box.
This is actually outside the 6-yard box,
he might go away with it. And plus, it wasn't that big a barge. It did go down quite easily.
Of course.
He did go down quite easily, but if you're looking up towards the ball and somebody barges into you...
You're thinking, hello, clouds, hello, Scott.
Maybe you also just want to make sure the referee sees it. And I think possibly, understandably so, given that it had already happened to him once in the game...
No, I can believe that, but if you start doing that, then you leave yourself open to having goals scored against you.
Yeah, this is true, but I think the bottom line is you shouldn't be sending out players to bash into opposition goals.
Sam Allardyce has got some brass neck in reporting the referee for not seeing certain things in that game as well.
Yeah. Brass neck Big Sam in other brass neck news. I'm not suited to Bolton or Blackburn. I would be more suited to Inter or Real Madrid, Allardyce said. It wouldn't be a problem to me to go and manage those clubs because I would win the double or the league every time. Now, I know that the media sometimes takes an innocent enough quote and puts it out of context. That's what's happened here, Raphael, isn't it?
Well, I think we can ask Sid later, but apparently Jose Mourinho wants to manage Portugal in the next international window. Maybe Real Madrid could get Sam Allardyce as an interim manager for these few days.
It could be a new reality TV show, Manager Swap, where Mourinho goes and takes Blackburn for the weekend and Allardyce takes Real Madrid.
The best thing was just on 5 Live on Saturday when they relayed the quotes to Stuart Hall and he just spent 45 seconds laughing. He couldn't stop laughing.
Excellent. Unlike our listeners now. We're on to part two very, very, very shortly, which features Raphael Honigstein on the Bundesliga and Sid Lowe on Spain. Part two, listeners, Bundesliga, Raphael Honigstein. Let's see. Result of the weekend, 7-0. 7-0 in the Bundesliga, Raphael.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, things are changing, aren't they?
They are changing.
You said that this is for listeners to join us. Raphael said you never get this kind of 6-0 thing in the Bundesliga.
Yes. There is. I mean, Stuttgart, you should never take what I say in here too literally or too seriously for that matter. But I did actually look into this because I was, of course, picked up on this once the result came in. And over the last 10 years. You only ever had 14 victories with 6 goals by a 6 goal margin, and only 5 with 7 and plus.
That's quite a lot.
In the Premier League, over the last 3 years, you had 10 6 goal margin victories and 5 7 plus.
Wow.
So there is some objective fact in what I'm saying.
All right.
It does happen a lot less frequently, but it was an amazing game. I think 5 goals came from dead ball situations, so they don't really suggest that Stuttgart necessarily played a fantastic game. It was just that Gladbach never turned up. They were terrible at the back. Logan Bailly, the Belgian goalkeeper, is usually very solid, dropped every single ball that was shot at him. Dante, the big Brazilian centre-back, the big afro, beautiful afro, you should check him out. He was terrible as well. And, you know, after losing 4-0 at home to Frankfurt, they've now shipped 11 goals in two games, Gladbach, wow, with no reply. And it's not good for them. I think they're a little bit like the Wigan, sort of the Bundesliga. You know, they can actually play good football, but then they forget the basics at the back from time to time and then get completely destroyed.
Simply have a keeper like Chris Kirkland, who is normally very reliable, and then just started dropping everything for fun.
Hmm. Although they now have Ali Al-Habsi, don't they?
Yeah, he's playing a bit better.
Yeah. 10-man Schalke lost at home to Dortmund. That's now four defeats in a row for Raul's new team. And we have the Bundesliga footy says Q for Honeystone. What does he make of Maggot's position at Schalke? Secure? Question mark?
Not for much longer. It's five games now, if you include the Lyon game in midweek that he's lost on the trot. And he spent a lot of money. They're at the bottom of the table with 0 points after four games. It's really not looking good for him. He will have a bit more credit because he took them to second spot last year and did more than anyone would have expected. But the problem is that he sort of overreached in a sense because he wanted Schalke now to be a footballing side. He's got good footballing players, trying to change the whole system around, got rid of all the good guys at the back, brought in a lot of okay guys up front, no rubbish guys at the back, and they're conceding his goals and he's destabilized his whole team in the process.
So Maggot's worked himself up into a lava, but he won't be able to worm himself out of this one. Is that right?
That's right.
Something like that. Okay.
Yeah. But the point we should really make is that Dortmund were quite awesome. They really played really, really well. In Shinji Kawagawa, they have signed a 21-year-old Japanese player who was playing in the second J-League division last year, if it's called the second J-League division, whatever it's called. They only got promoted a few months ago, and he's scored two goals and he's been absolutely outstanding. He really was sort of unplayable, and the whole Dortmund team, their work as a unit, they're really sort of a high pressurized, high pressing side, play very, very fast, good passing, good movement. They also got a good result away to Lev in the Europa League. 4-3 they won in the very last minute. So they're sort of an exciting team, kind of going places, and Schalke are going the other way.
Is this Japanese player's name again?
Shinji Kagawa.
Right, and he was signed for a hundredth of Schalke's transfer budget, you were saying?
Yeah, he was signed for €350,000.
Wow.
And most people estimate Schalke's total outlay to be about €35 million.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a 100th of the total outlay. The derby was also, the Ruhr derby, the Revier derby between Schalke and Dortmund was also notable for this fan boycott. I don't know if you know about this, but Dortmund fans, who are the away fans, they decided that they're not going to put up with a 50% ticket hike in ticket prices and boycott the game. And, you know, this is the biggest game in the Bundesliga calendar, so it's quite a big thing to do, to say, no, we're not going, we're sending the tickets
back.
Couldn't
they just worn different scarves, you know, with different colours on or something like that?
Out of the 6,000 tickets that were sold to Dortmund fans or made available to Dortmund fans, 1,600 were returned. And the club didn't sell them again. So for the first time in decades, a derby was not sold out. And they got a lot of good press for this because they didn't want to do this. They felt sort of kind of awful not supporting the team and not going to the derby. But they said, if we don't do it now, then Schalke will raise ticket prices again next year. And then everybody else will do it. And then you'll end up in a situation where you're going to be like the Premier League with no cheap tickets available.
So,
and
another example,
they've been
Germany
quite smart about this.
Germany showing England how to do it with all these protests we've had over here, where people go and buy another scarf instead, but a different colour, like you say, you know, the green and gold protest, or Liverpool fans marching to the match they always go to and then paying the money anyway, you know, but saying, well, we're protesting on the way from the pub to the match, which is just what they do anyway, you know.
Well, there you go. Schalke, the bad guys. Then there was a little bit of trouble as well in another derby, it was the Hamburg derby.
Yeah, there was quite ugly clashes on the Reeperbahn, the red light district, just outside the ground for where St. Pauli play. They played Hamburg.
You were saying the other day that St. Pauli are popular with everybody except Hamburg.
Yes,
right?
Yeah. I think that's fair to say. I mean, they're sort of a lovable cult club, but they're not very much loved by their bigger neighbours, Hamburg and vice versa. And, you know, both teams and both clubs spend the whole week sort of de-escalating the situation, saying, you know, we don't want any trouble and let's talk to each other. And it's sort of the peace held all throughout the game, because the game was quite awful until the 30 minutes from time when Tobias Ball scored and then Petric equalised at the very death. But then afterwards it really kicked off and there were about 50 arrests and it was quite ugly.
Is that a worrying tendency? Is that just a bit of a...
I think it's
one-off.
A one-off. It was the first derby ever played at St. Pauli.
Right.
Because when they were in the Bundesliga before, they used to go to play at the bigger ground at Hamburg where things were a little bit more secure,
right.
Easier to divide the fans, etc.
Are the St. Pauli the ones with the skull and crossbones logo?
Yes.
Where'd they get that from?
They're the ones. They just adopted it.
That's cool.
No, they're all anarchy and stuff.
Yeah, that's why I wondered, you know, if you had to be a squatter to get in their squad.
Yeah. It helps.
Interesting.
Well, actually, Fabian Ball, the guy who scored, is a policeman. He's only a semi-professional. Half the time he works as a police officer.
Yeah, but anarchists aren't usually police officers, are they?
Yeah.
It's the ultimate.
It's a broad church.
It is, isn't it?
Pauli.
If you can smash the
state. Steve McLaren finally got a win as Wolfsburg beat Hanover 2-0.
He did get a win. He did get in his first few words of German.
Ah.
On live television.
What were they?
Saying, drei große Punkte heute, as they say.
Yeah?
Three big coins, yeah.
Oh, yeah, three. It wouldn't have been two, would it?
He was very happy. Wolfsburg played well. Hannover, quite a bad side as well. Diego scored a good goal. A Berbatov-esque kind of overhead falling down-ish kind of... effort, very, very good goal.
All right.
And he got kicked in the ribs afterwards by a terrible foul, which was sort of Nigel de Jong, shades of Nigel de Jong, where there wasn't even a yellow card because the referee stupidly, which happens quite often now in football, that the really good, nasty foulers disguise it so well they make it look like an accident. So he said, no, I couldn't see any intention here. And obviously he just accidentally broke his rib cage. So couldn't give him a yellow card, unfortunately.
It's rotten, isn't it? Raphael, thank you so much for that roundup. Should we try Sid in the wide world of sport somewhere?
Hello, Jim. How are you?
Very well. You sound like you're in a hurry or on a mission. You've got that sense of urgency and business-like quality to your voice.
I was midway through writing a sentence, but apart from that, I'm not in any particular hurry.
All right. What was the sentence about, Sid?
The sentence was, make no mistake, Pep Guardiola insists what we did tonight was an absolute scandal.
Oh.
Guardiola was very, very pleased with the way that Barcelona played last night. Very, very upset, of course, about the way the game ended because of the Leo Messi injury.
All right, then. Listeners, Barcelona did win at Atletico Madrid, but they did lose Lionel Messi for what? Are they talking about a month now?
No, good news there. The doctor's report has just come through from Barcelona. There's no damage to the bone, which was the initial concern, of course, that he might even have fractured it. Because if you see the pictures, his ankle was completely doubled over under the pressure of Thomas Tuchel's studs. There's some ligament damage, but it's basically just a sprained ankle. So what they've said is that Leo Messi will definitely miss the next two games. And then after that, it will depend on how things... how quickly the swelling goes down, how quickly the pain goes away. But it looks like we're probably looking at a fortnight out of action for Leo Messi.
How big an impact will that have on Barca?
It's very difficult to know for certain. I think the fixtures help because, unless I'm mistaken, it's Sporting Gijón in midweek. I suppose that's bad news for Barcelona, the fact that there's midweek games as well, so that could have an impact. But it's not the worst of matches for them. It's Sporting in midweek. They then go away to Athletic Bilbao, which will be tough, I think, but at home against Mallorca, and Messi will, I'm guessing, be back in time to face Valencia at home, which is on the 17th.
Yeah, Valencia are on top of the table, though, Sid.
And Valencia are top of the table at the moment, but as I say, Messi should be back by then. I think at home against Sporting, they won't have any problems. I think Messi's absence away at San Mamés against Athletic Bilbao could be very significant, yeah.
Mm, all right, then. Meanwhile, at Real Madrid, did they take any notice of Big Sam's comments re how he could win the double every time at Real or Inter?
No, it wasn't talked about at all.
Oh, he'll be disappointed.
Which is a shame. Yeah, he will be disappointed. People ignoring Big Sam, eh? What a complete tool. You can offer Big Sam a list of Real Madrid coaches. I believe I'm right in saying that it's six in a row under the current president, Florentino Perez, who haven't won anything. Now, it may well be that Sam Allardyce is a very, very good coach, but to say that he would definitely win something every year with Real Madrid just completely overlooks the reality, A, of Real Madrid, B, of who their opponents are, Barcelona, and C, I would perhaps suggest maybe the reality of Sam himself.
Do you know what? I found Big Sam to be quite an engaging person on the occasion that I met him. He must have been joking. I mean, we were having a bit of a pop at him with this, but he must have been having a laugh.
I really hope so. I mean, I must confess, I've only seen the written comments, and so he may well have been joking. I'm sure it was partly tongue-in-cheek, but I think probably the point he was making was with players like that, you can't fail. The thing is, it's not quite as simple as players like that. Real Madrid have shown quite a lot over the last 6 or 7 years.
Mm. Sorry, Paul.
No, because he did famously once call himself Aladici. And said that if his
did he
name
actually call himself that? Or
yeah, he said if his name was Aladici, then he would have been the England manager.
England manager, right. Okay, interesting.
I assume there, to be fair to him, he's trying to make a specific point. And this is something that's been said before. I think it was Samuel Eto'o once complained about the Ballon d'Or award and said that if his name was Etudinho, he'd have won it. Now, of course, the underpinning that entire comment was not just his sense of not being glamorous enough because he's not a Brazilian, but his deep and burning passionate hatred for Ronaldinho at the time, and that's something that's come to the fore again this week in an interview in L'Equipe when Samuel Eto'o said Ronaldinho joined Barcelona, they won nothing, I joined Barcelona and we won the lot.
Yeah, and he looked brilliant at the weekend as well, Samuel Eto'o, but perhaps there'll be a chance to talk about that later. Jose Mourinho wants to manage Portugal part-time, discuss.
Yeah, real mess that Real Madrid and Jose Mourinho have made of this. I'm tempted to say, actually, to be fair to Real Madrid, real mess that Jose Mourinho has made of this rather than them. Some representatives of the Portuguese Federation came in last week. They had lunch with Mourinho and his agent. They talked to him about the possibility of taking over for those two games in October. Mourinho was very, very keen. He said publicly, although I'm sure that there's a certain degree of trying to keep Portuguese fans on board, he said publicly that he wouldn't want any money, that he'd do anything he could for his country and he'd love to manage them during those two games, and that he said that he didn't think that should be a problem for Real Madrid. Well, the way Real Madrid look at it is they're paying him a huge salary, they want him to be entirely focused on the job, and there's no way in the world that he's going to do this. Now, Mourinho then came out, and this is where I talk about the mess. Mourinho came out on Saturday night after the game talking to a Portuguese journalist but also with a Spanish journalist there from Goal TV, and he said, I don't understand why Madrid haven't accepted this. I don't understand why I can't do this. It's only 10 days in October. And then he said, and it's 10 days in which I will basically be on holiday in Madrid, which incidentally isn't what he said during the last international break. And he said, and if I stay in Madrid, I might have 3 or 4 players. If I go with Portugal, I'll have 3 of my players anyway, because of Carvalho, Pepe and Cristiano Ronaldo, of course. And he said, I don't see what the problem is, and I don't understand why they haven't accepted it. 2 hours later, he's forced at the airport on the way back from San Sebastian, where Real Madrid beat Real Sociedad 2-1. 2 o'clock in the morning, he's forced to come out and say, no, you misunderstood me. What I said was, I don't understand why there wasn't a meeting between the Portuguese Federation and Real Madrid. In other words, trying to push the blame onto other people rather than onto himself, and onto the Federation to some extent rather than himself. This, of course, is off the back of Jorge, the Director General of the club, saying, no, there hasn't even been an approach. We haven't spoken to Portuguese FA and we're not going to. I think Real Madrid are most upset about this.
Yeah. Even though they could have Big Sam as a replacement, as Rafael was pointing out earlier on.
That would be great, wouldn't it? I mean, that's the thing in all of this. You know, sort of say that Sam Allardyce has said something pretty stupid, but I'd love to see him be given the chance to prove himself right.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Still to come, the delights of the Championship and more excitements from lovely Italy and their wonderful Serie A. What do you want first?
There's no time for Italy.
Championship or Italy? Italy, excellent. Excellent. You know, there were some good goals scored this weekend. And, you know, you had your Berbatov and your Diego. Quagliarella, though. Fabio Quagliarella. Have you seen it, Rafael?
No.
Beautiful, beautiful. He is enjoying the close attention of his marker from Udinese while playing for Juventus, his new club, Quagliarella. So much so that he's pretty much being pushed over. But even as he gets pitched face forwards, away from the goal, he still manages to caress lovingly a ball with the back of his foot and just whap it into the goal. Anyway, it was brilliant. Brilliant goal by Ciro Capuana for Crazy Catania, who handed Milan yet another disappointing result. Milan were at home to Catania on Saturday night and could only manage a 1-1 draw. They are rotten, Milan. They do look, you know, you have flashes of great skill, etc., etc., but most of the time they just look awful. The big problem is they're all up there, up front, and you got who? They didn't have Robinho, and Pato was injured, so they had Ibrahimovic, Inzaghi, and Ronaldinho. And of the three, Inzaghi was the one doing the most tracking back, which probably paints a bit of a picture.
He's the oldest one, yeah.
He is the oldest, yeah, and he's now only one goal away from Van Basten's scoring record with Milan. He's still banging them in. He got the equaliser. And he did. Things did look a little bit better, but the big problem for Milan is that Allegri, the manager, has been handed these players, and he's trying to play three up front, and it really doesn't work. And every time the other team break, you've got Pirlo standing there trying to, trying to stop this onslaught, and it doesn't really work out. And the bad news from Milan's point of view is that they have Lazio coming up midweek, who are at the moment a very big counter-attacking team. They've just won at Fiorentina. And so Allegri is getting all sorts of question marks thrown at him because it's a disastrous start. I should mention that Allegri, his previous job was at Cagliari. And when he was appointed there, he came a little bit out of the blue. He hadn't had any big experience in Serie A. He lost his first five games. Now, Cagliari were a club that always used to fire. You know, they would feel that they had failed in some way if they hadn't fired a manager by Christmas. Bizarrely, though, he was allowed to stay on and took them into the top half of the table, almost got them into Europe. So maybe, if Berlusconi is willing to give Allegri some time, he will effect a similar turnaround after a similarly poor start at Milan.
Will he get time from Berlusconi, do you think, James?
Well, I don't know. It was interesting to read the comments by Leonardo, who's, as we know, one of the nicest, most diplomatic men in football, was such a fan of the club Milan that he basically stayed there, became a director for them after his playing career had finished. And then agreed to take over when they were in a bit of a hole when Ancelotti left. But he's left them on such bad terms. He gave this big interview to the Gazzetta on the weekend where he said Berlusconi is like Narcissus. He can't stand anything that's not just a mirror. So yeah, way to go.
That would seem to be in keeping with our understanding of Silvio.
Yes, indeed. So top of the table are now Cesena, who of course beat Milan famously in the previous round, 2-0. In fact, listen to this. This is the top of the table. The top four are Cesena and Inter on 7 points, then Brescia and Lazio on 6. How about that for a top four? The bottom four, Roma on 2 points, Palermo and Fiorentina on 1 point, and then Udinese on 0 points. Udinese got beaten 4-0 by Juventus at the weekend in Udine, which was a really big result because it was Juve's first proper performance under Del Neri. They're beginning to look like a Del Neri team now, which means that effectively they're beginning to look like Chievo did 8 years ago. What a thing Serie A has come to when you've got Juve basically copying little Chievo. But anyway, sorry, Greg, you've got another question. Huh?
What about Roma?
God bless you.
Yeah. What about Roma?
Yeah, it's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah. Did Claudio Ranieri really lose it in a press conference beforehand?
It's been hailed as his Mourinho moment. Mm. He came in and basically laid down the law to the journalists. Not unfairly, because he is being taken to task for a situation not entirely of his own making. It's a very precarious position the club is in. The key player is Totti, who can't make it through a season and basically just strolls around and is looking a bit fat. I think he's looking like he's got a big ass these days, isn't he, Totti? And then he complains afterwards that it's all the manager's fault, Totti does, for playing Catenaccio. And then the press then big this up. And the club, in the meantime, are busy. They're in the hands of the banks now, so... And then the players arrive right at the end of the transfer window, so Ranieri's having some struggle. What? Raphael's pointing at the producer, saying he's running out of tape. Anyway, it's very bad. It's very bleak. But then they did this last year. They had a really bad start last year when Spalletti was in charge of the first two games. Then Ranieri came in. Look, I'm rushing now. I'm gabbling. And took them all the way to within 2 points of the title
in
at the
work experience, people are leaving.
Yeah, I know. They're going to find out more. They're going to watch YouTube to see the great goal by Capuano and Quagliarella. Anyway, there you go. That's enough. I'll stop. Inter, great victory for them. They won at Palermo. The first team to win at Palermo in 29 matches, Paul McGuinness.
You were saying that Samuel Eto'o was looking good in that game.
Ah, fantastic. He was. And the great thing about this game, which is being hailed as the best performance by Inter under Benitez, is that it came without Schneider, who was the key man last year. If Schneider was playing, they were great. If he wasn't, problems. But he didn't play this time. And
who makes the midfield stick in his absence?
Stankovic played in that position, and Stankovic is usually a bit of a wardrobe in midfield, but he actually looked really good. Lovely little interchange of play of passes and a lovely backheel in the first goal from Stankovic. But Eto'o's fantastic. That's the thing. Eto'o had been played out wide under Mourinho, but Benitez is allowing him now to come in, and because Milito's not scoring any goals, Eto'o is. It's a bit like the Rooney
Benitez is Berbatov playing somebody situation. In the right position, is he? In the the preferred position. Oh.
This is no time for bitterness. No. Move on. Let's move on then, listeners, to the Championship. You've got 4 minutes, Paul. That's all I've left you.
I've only got about 4 words of notes. What would you like to know about?
I want to know about QPR and that man, Jamie Mackey. Is he the deadliest player in football?
Well, he's doing very well. And his second goal, he was coming in, he's a centre forward, but he came in off the left and skinned two people on the outside, slipped the shot from a very tight angle, and he looked class. And only £150,000 from Plymouth. Oof. And they've still got Tommy Smith and Rob Holster coming to the team, QPR. I think they're looking very good. I was just looking at their defence, though. I mean, they brought Paddy Kenny in at the close season. They've got Kyle Walker on loan from Spurs. They've still got Casper Gorks and Sean Derry. Very, very good standard Championship defence. So a lot of people talking about how good they are going forward with Tarapt, etc. Already, they're looking pretty formidable, QPR.
Oxford have got Jamie Mackey scoring 7 goals in 8 shots on target.
Wow.
Yeah, that's shots on target, though, so he might have had 45 off target before he scored those
goals. In fair point.
What about Roy Keane's Ipswich, though, hey?
Yeah, and what about Connor Wickham? Have you seen this Connor Wickham guy? He looks like Duncan Ferguson. So he's like 18 and he's 6 foot whatever and he's about 6 foot wide and he looks like he's a killer. He's just got this kind of real steely-eyed focus going on. But he's got lovely feet as well. Ipswich completely dominated Bellamy's Cardiff. And Connor Wickham, he made the difference. He won the battles. He had at least 2 chances saved off the line. This is somebody who they ended up selling John Walters to Stoke in the summer, kind of because they had to, but it meant they didn't have to sell Connor Wickham. If they can get a good season out of him, on top of what looks like a very steady, organised side, I think Ipswich could well be up there. But they pulled Cardiff back into that mix and it looked like, QPR and Cardiff were the teams to be beaten, particularly with Cardiff bringing Bellamy on board, but Bellamy's out of the team. You look beneath those, you're not beneath QPR now, and you've got the usual thing of going all the way down to 10th place and everybody being in contention. And even then, you've got Swansea getting into form.
Yeah, Rocky Kay, sorry. How about mention of Swansea in the next Championship roundup? Another new manager after a close season and more change brought in a not very highly rated Brendan Rodgers. Got Scott Sinclair for an absolute steal at £500,000 and 100% home record and into the top 6.
Yeah, 3 goals in his last 4 games for Scott Sinclair. He's got pace. He's got a bit of quality about him. They brought in Frank Nubler from West Ham as well. There was also another pacey, strong, threatening striker. They've got a reputation for playing the best football in the division. They need more goals, and maybe these two will be the people to bring it for them.
To conclude, Watford 6-1 at Watford. Millwall with pitch invasion.
Yeah, I mean, the pitch invasion sounded like a bit of an abortive attempt. He didn't get anywhere near any of the players and then ended up getting assaulted himself.
Oh, was it just one man?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, sadly, yes. But this is Millwall, uh-huh. So you have to take these things with a pinch of salt. And Watford are another one of these teams who are in the mix. They are unbeaten away. They got turned over at home once, but they've been putting in very good away performances. Great on the break. This Marvin Soldell guy who's been brought into the team, young player. This is what Malky Mackay's had to do a lot, bring the young players into the side. 4 goals in 3 games. So Watford, and they're another one, like my Norwich. They've got a recently retired, chunky Scotsman in charge, and they seem to be doing the business. Another one, Brendan Rodgers. Mm. So they're all, they're the ones to look out for, the chunky Scots. Can I just make a mention of Darren Huckabee, briefly? Yeah. Darren Huckabee runs his own website now called dh6.co.uk. And he writes his own match reports. He goes to every Norwich game. I don't know what he's doing with the rest of his life, but he is going to every Norwich game. And he started writing match reports. And they're quite dull, but he's taking it up a notch. These last 2 weeks, he's been going into the dressing room after the game and getting players to write match reports. So now on the Darren Huckabee website, you can read Grant Holt's report about Norwich's 1-0 away at Preston.
Like a first-person match report?
No, it's like a third-person objective match report, but written by one of the players. Yeah. So if you didn't think that sports journalism was on the way out already, Darren Huckabee's got some news for you.
What we could do after we finish this pod, like now, is each go and post, when producer Ben gets it up there, we could each go and post our own review of the pod.
Nice. Meta.
Yeah, interesting. That's all we've got time for today. Many, many thanks. Excellent Championship roundup there, Paul. Greg, thank you so much for your input as well and asking a few questions in the Italian bit.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. Yeah,
lovely. Rafael, fantastic. And
thank you.
Look forward to seeing you soon, all of you, and you, producer Ben, and listeners. We'll be back with you on Thursday, as ever, with a roundup of all those exciting Carling Cup fixtures and more. For now, though, from all of us here, it is goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.